House Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:25 on March 20th. Present, we have Representative Lynn, Representative Coghill, Representative Holmes, and myself, Chair Olson. We have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your BlackBerries and cell phones. Under bills previously heard, I'm bringing back Bill, House Bill 175. It will be real brief. We have a CS that deleted a bit of verbiage, and the only thing I want to do is put it out before the committee. We're not going to be taking any action on it. And with us, we have Linda Hall from the Division of Insurance. Could you please join us, Linda? Welcome back to town.
For the record, Linda Hall, Director of the Division of Insurance. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is a CS before you, / S.
Before you go any further, I would entertain a motion to adopt just for discussion purposes.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we take up for consideration a CS for House Bill 175, Labor and Commerce, and that's the LS0579/S version, please.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you. The only change in this bill from the prior bill that I presented to you week or so ago, is the removal of sections 25 and 26. These were provisions that were in our receivership and liquidation statute dealing with loss reimbursement policies and early access to funds from an insolvent insurer. There was apparently some concern about the language, and as a result, we decided it wasn't a critical piece to have in the bill at this time, and so those have been removed from the bill, and the rest of the bill remains exactly as it was when I presented to you on March 11th.
Any questions for Linda? Seeing none, thank you, Linda, and we'll be holding this bill over to a later date when everybody, all the stakeholders have an opportunity to go over the changes.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Linda. Next item on today's agenda is House Bill 22, Workers' Compensation Subcontractors. And I believe Representative Crawford's here along with, are you going to be carrying it or Paul going to join you or both of you?
Yeah.
You taking first shot?
Both available for questions here.
Please join us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And if you wait 1 second, we'll get a chair for Paul, too. And
I just want to say, to begin with, how much I appreciate you once again bringing House Bill 22 before you. It's a passion of longstanding of mine. And for a number of people around here, when my aide was the director of the Division of Workers' Comp, he was trying to get it passed back in those days. And we've brought this bill forward a number of times. And what it does basically is levels the playing field, because there are a number of subcontractors that claim to be owner operators and not employees, and some people actually have a legitimate claim to that and some people don't, and what this does is it takes the uncertainty out of that and requires everybody that subcontracts to a general contractor to have their own workers' comp insurance. It's a real simple bill. It just lays it out. like I said, just takes the uncertainty out of it for everybody. Be glad to answer questions. And I know that you have another CS coming.
We have a CS coming that will incorporate some verbiage that will probably end up being the model bill nationwide with any luck. And we've been working, got together with the Division of Insurance this morning to look at it. We're getting the ball rolling on a CS, which I think will be acceptable to all parties concerned. There are copies of the statute that we're looking at out in the hallway, and I believe they're at the LIOs? They'll be at the LIO shortly, but Paul, do you have anything you'd care to add?
I think that, well, we did, you know, we summed the bill up pretty well last time, and the only thing I would say is we did have a chance to look at the CS, and it does look like it would work in the substitute of this bill.
But without dragging the director of the Division of Insurance out there, I think she shares that sentiment. So I hate putting words in her mouth, and we could get her back up. But any questions for the sponsor or for Paul? Or we have a number of people that care to weigh in. I guess we can start in the room. Well,
thank you.
That was painless, wasn't it?
So far, so good.
So far.
Let's see. Why don't we start with Alan Wilson? Welcome, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Alan Wilson. I am a owner of Alaska Renovators. I am a Juneau-based home builder. This issue has been kicking around for some time. I've worked on it for several sessions, I believe. The primary issue is that in the home building industry, we use a lot of sole proprietor subcontractors, carpet, tile, cabinet guys. There's just bunches of them. And the problem arises when they get licensed, they're allowed to exempt themselves from workers' compensation. Now, on the other side of the fence, we have the insurance industry that requires me to get certificates of insurance from all my subcontractors. And that's the problem. These guys don't have them, so then we end up getting charged for their receipts. So if they send me a bill that includes labor and materials, I get to pay whatever classification they're in on that invoice, and that's where the injustice comes into play. I haven't had a chance to read through your Tennessee language. It looks like it would accomplish at least take the gray area out of this issue and resolve it once and for all. So I look forward to seeing the CS. Thank you.
Any questions? Thanks again for joining us. Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify? Seeing none, we will go off net to Bronson Fry.
Hello there.
You're obviously with us. Welcome this afternoon. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Hello, my name is Bronson Fry. I'm a business representative for the Painters and Allied Trade, Local 1959. I represent workers in the following trades: painting, drywall taping, and floor covering. I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 22, requiring workman's comp for owner-operators or sole proprietors. And the reason I'm in support of it is because it has become standard operating procedure for contractors in the painting, drywall taping, and floor covering industry to bid large-scale commercial construction projects and, upon being awarded the contract, turn around and re-subcontract the work to entire crews made up of owner-operators. Of course, sole proprietors have the legal right to waive themselves on workman's comp, but when your entire workforce is made up of these owner-operators who do waive themselves on workman's comp, you suddenly have a huge unfair bidding advantage against contractors who do provide insurance for their workers. This practice is killing our industry by making it almost impossible for a legitimate contractor to compete. We feel that Representative Crawford has sponsored a bill here, House Bill 22, that provides assurance that whoever is laboring out there in our workforce will be properly insured and that contractors bidding work are doing so on a completely fair and balanced playing field. Furthermore, this practice of subcontracting to multiple tiers of so-called contractors in an effort to avoid workman's comp and taxes has become so commonplace in the construction that I came across a Craigslist ad on February 12th announcing help wanted independent contractors in Juneau. It says independent contractors needed to help with reset work within a home improvement store. So this is a commercial construction. Under the requirements, it says experience not necessary. On-site training is provided. And then under compensation, it says hourly range, $9 to $11 an hour. And right underneath that, it says this is a contract job. Now, I've grown up and worked around construction my whole life. and I have never heard of a legitimate subcontractor working under a legitimate subcontract who had zero experience and worked for $9 an hour. I think anyone would agree that someone working in commercial construction with no experience working for $9 an hour is far more likely to be an employee of some sort and by no means a true independent contractor. Now, I only mention this Craigslist ad to show how brazen some contractors have become in their misclassification of employees in an effort to avoid workman's comp as well as any taxes a contractor would normally match for their employees. Again, I support House Bill 22, and I applaud Representative Crawford for introducing it. Thank you for your time, sir. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thanks again, Mr. Fry. Chris Gregg, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you've got the floor.
Chris Gregg, I'm affiliated with Painters Local 1959. We'd like to formally endorse House Bill 22 regarding workers' compensation insurance for independent contractors. Our local was chartered on July 11, 1939. We have traditionally done drywall finishing, taping, painting, and floor covering work in the construction arena. In recent years, however, we have seen our marketplace ravaged by contractors who bid major tape and paint and flooring jobs and then turn around and resub the work to large crews of independent contractors and who are not required to pay workman's comp, unemployment insurance, or SSI on themselves. This gives the original contractor the ability to bid work without having to even figure workman's comp into his overall price, thus giving him a considerable edge against any contractor who is bidding the same project but who actually pays insurance on his employees as the state law dictates. Since workman's compensation insurance is upwards to 30% on payroll costs in those aforementioned industries, this can mean that an unscrupulous contractor can effectively shave thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars off bids just by misclassifying his workers. The misclassification of employees has become standard operating procedure in the taping, painting, and floor covering markets in Alaska, and it must come to an end if the law-abiding and honest contractors are going to have any chance at being competitive. We applaud Representative Crawford for your efforts in getting this legislation introduced, and please be assured that the Painters and Allied Trades are standing behind you in full support.
Any questions for Mr. Gregg? Thanks again. Daryl Klopfer.
Yes, my name is Daryl Klopfer. I'm Vice President of Pacific Partition Systems. We've been an Alaska corporation since 1976. We're a very predominant metal stud framing, gypsum wallboard, drywall taping and painting subcontractor. We have been out of the painting industry and taping industry for approximately 10 years as a result of independent contractors being used as a trade labor personal force rather than classified as an employee. I've been placed in a approximate 30% disadvantage in trying to secure work in that arena. And we applaud Mr. Crawford for the presentation of House Bill 22. We want to support it fully. I'm currently involved in projects, in estimating projects. We do a significant amount of state projects, municipal projects, government projects on the base. And we're now being asked by general contractors that currently support this independent contractor trade force, we're being asked to take and separate out our bid quote numbers from metal studs and drywall as there's an increasing influx of independent contractors in the installation of the gypsum wallboard. So I'm now taking that portion of scope of work of mine and putting it in jeopardy and decreasing my availability in the marketplace for commercial construction. And it's a very frustrating situation. I think that the legislature and all those that have the ability to look more into the definition of an employee versus an independent contractor. I've reviewed and downloaded a bunch of website information today on the IRS, and none of these independent contractors that we're forced to compete against have in a category defined by the IRS as a profit and loss a loss exposure. There is no loss exposure to these individuals. They're being paid basically on an hourly basis, of which is questionable as to the number of hours worked versus reported. But I guess that's about what I have. I brought Representative Crawford, and we support House Bill 22.
Thank you very much. Michael Galeotto, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Please state your name and affiliation, and thank you for testifying.
My name is Michael Galeotto. I represent myself, and I believe that my colleagues have said everything that I wanted to say, and I agree with them solely. And I'd like to reserve the right to testify later, if that's all possible.
Yeah, we'll be holding the testimony open until the we have the CS, after everybody's had a chance to take a look at it, but thank you.
Thank you.
Keith Montgomery.
Hello, my name is Keith Montgomery. I represent Carpenters Local 1281, affiliated with the United Brotherhood of Carpenters. We represent carpenters, drywallers, metal set framers, and various trades that are within the scope of carpentry. Quite frankly, it's a misclassification of workers. What we've seen in the field and what I've experienced is you've got tiers of subcontractors that are independent contractors, but yet the contractor is buying the material, he's directing the work, he's paying them, and sometimes cash under the table. So basically, it's gaming the system. It's gaming the state, the federal government, as well as, you know, hospitals, because when the injured worker gets injured on the job, eventually, you know, they can't turn them down. So there's additional higher cost in medical insurance when they go to the hospital. It's unfair to honest businesses like, you know, Daryl Crawford's business with Pacific Partitions and other businesses that we represent, or just even if they're a contractor being honest and playing by the rules. So we've seen a lot of we've had a lot of people come into us and have not been paid because of this. They originally signed up to be an independent contractor, and yet they had not been paid because it's a way of cheating the system. So it's just a way to level the playing field and to play by the rules. That's all I have.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Montgomery. Is there anybody else online that would care to testify on this bill? Any further questions from the committee? Well, we'll be holding this over till we get the CS. And the next item on the agenda, do we need set up time on this? Or?
Oh, we may need a minute. Yeah,
we'll take a brief of these. HCR 1 Residential Home Sprinkler Systems. Representative Seaton is carrying the bill and is with us, along with Mary Jane Shows. So, welcome to Labor and Commerce, and please state your name and affiliation for the record, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I represent Paul Seaton from Homer, House District 35.
Well, you know him pretty well, too, don't you?
Yeah. And appreciate you scheduling HCR 1. And Mr. Chairman, there is a CS that I believe you have.
I think we're going to adopt that right now, aren't we?
Sure, we can do that. Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt for CS for House concurrent resolution number one, the LS0228/R version.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would just like to note that the only difference has been that in three different places we've inserted the word voluntary. The program has totally been voluntary all the time, but some people were concerned that there was some mix-up with some other legislation which was mandatory, and so we wanted to be sure that everybody knew exactly what this was, that it's voluntary. And so in the title and in two other places it shows in the whereas and also in resolve that this is trying to promote voluntary installation of sprinkler systems in Alaska to save people's lives and property. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'll remove my objection. Is there any further objection to the CS? Seeing none, none of the CS is adopted. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What started this process along the line was I was in a trailer in Homer, in fact, by the fire department. They were down there, and they had these great little demonstration trailer that they brought down, and you actually went into this trailer, and you were sitting there. There was a partial block of some plexiglass, and they had what you'll see soon is a demonstration of what it would be like if you were in a house that had curtains and there was a fire, and they had a single head residential sprinkler system, and we were sitting in that trailer, and here goes this fire, and it's put out to save lives, save property. So that's the design. It's not like a commercial head that takes a long time after a fire gets going. They residential sprinkler heads go off at a much lower temperature. So when a fire is just getting started, you can use much less water. They put out much more of a mist than a large volume of water, somewhere around 15 gallons per minute instead of 50 gallons a minute on a commercial, or 50 up to 150 on the commercial sprinkler heads, which are really designed to save buildings and property instead of the residential, which are designed to knock down and put out fire when it's much smaller and to save lives. So the resolution is actually about two things. One, we worked with the state fire marshal in developing a program so that people could get partial coverage of their houses, the most prominent ignition sources. In fact, I passed out, and it's in your packet, but just to pull out, there's a sheet. And you'll notice down there on the box, and this is 2007, the residential structure fire causes, and you'll see that 35% were from cooking and 39% was from heating. So if you can cover your the ignition sources around your heating system and around cooking, you can, you know, you're talking almost three quarters of all the fires. And so what the idea of this is to encourage that the installation of those. And just for an example, how expensive this is, I just called Harry's Plumbing and Heating down here, a sprinkler head. They cover roughly 10 to 12 circular feet, so 10 by 10, 100 square feet area. And that's $8.20 retail price going down here and buying one right now. And that would be at 155 degree, and it's got threads on the end, and it's just like these. There would be a pipe in the ceiling, and you put it in, but it doesn't have to be on the ceiling. There's other ones, and you have some pictures of those that mount on the wall. And with the advent of the PEX tubing that's used now in many houses, this could be run off the existing residential sprinkler system, existing water system. And so individuals can get a plumber, or homeowners can do these themselves and cover their, you know, for their own safety. And so what this resolution does, it encourages the full development of that program and the identification of what Alaskans can do on a voluntary basis in their own homes to save lives. And the biggest cause of loss of life consistently is unattended cooking. Somebody left stuff on the stove, starts a trailer, starts a house on fire, and people die from it. So a residential sprinkler head in their kitchen that would cover the stove, we would have that loss of life prevented. And you know, I could cite you many examples. In fact, we had just 2 years ago in Ketchikan, the state administration, you know, we had some state workers that died down there that were in their house. I mean, a tragic fire. I think we had four people lost. And so that's the whole purpose of this, is to prevent the loss of life and loss of property. And so it encourages the director of insurance to work with the insurance companies in Alaska to develop an incentive program or incentives, discount or credit on their homeowners insurance, if they have homeowners insurance, or fire insurance, so that it's just one more way to build an incentive for getting fire prevention into the homes. And if I could, we'll show a couple of short clips.
Like I said, this is completely automated. This is the same type of system you will see in the residence. Our part in this is just to light the curtains. Once we get this started on fire, we'll shut the burner off and it'll take care of itself after that. So here's some more to go out outside to get this system monitored and wired into a hard stroke system. So we've only got about 3 yards worth of material back there. But that'll be enough that you can get quite a bit of heat coming off of that window. If we shut the burner off, then it's just the material.
That's quickly, you have the sidewall on the wall.
You put a sidewall back there, right? And this head is part of the same system.
So that was how a sprinkler head works in a house, and I have one more video to.
Hi, I'm Randy Burton, fire chief for the city of Fresno. If you're buying a new home, you can now upgrade to have the protection of a firefighter in your home 24 hours a day.
So you can see.
I believe that's the first time we've had a commercial in Labor and Commerce.
So you can see that some things are better than real life. Interesting thing is that people are trying to get out the news that sprinkler systems, residential sprinkler systems, save lives. And the problem has been in Alaska that generally nothing is accepted. It's not by code or anything like that, but nothing is accepted unless there's 100% coverage of every part of the house. Now, if there's a smoker, you're probably going to need that. But if you have a non-smoking household, you look to the ignition sources, and if you can cover those ignition sources with three sprinkler heads, all of a sudden for, $32 worth of sprinkler heads and, the PEX tubing and the fittings are almost nothing. You can have plumbers install it. This requests that the Department of Labor work with the plumbers so that they would be able to go in and verify that a sprinkler head has been installed to basically cover those areas. And so we're trying to get it so that homeowners, if they're handy and they want to protect their property and the lives of their family, have an incentive and an easy way to do it, to go in and verify this partial coverage. Now, of course, if there was new construction and there was AHFC or somebody else had a requirement that there's a sprinkler system in, this isn't going to be what we're covering here. What we're covering here is basically partial coverage and encouraging people to get coverage through their houses. And I might just say that you have in your packet the cost-benefit analysis for residential fire sprinklers from the National Institute of Standards and Technology. That's September 2007. And it says Homeland Security on the front. And And if I might just read a little bit from the executive summary, and that is, over the 2002 and 2005 study period, houses equipped with smoke alarms and a fire sprinkler system experienced 100% fewer civilian casualties, 57% fewer civilian injuries, 32% less direct property damage and indirect costs resulting from fire than from houses equipped only with smoke alarms. So you have that kind of benefit of if you have a smoke alarm and a extinguisher system than if you just are covered with a smoke alarm, because we're not knocking smoke alarms at all. I mean, those are very necessary. You need them in addition because you want to know that there was a fire, but you want to knock down that fire and make sure that you have time to get out of the house as well. In addition, homeowners of dwellings with fire sprinkler systems received an added bonus of an 8% reduction in their homeowners insurance premium per year, according to the ISO. This report finds that the monetized value of a residential fire sprinkler system over a 30-year analysis period to yield homeowners about $4,994 in present value benefits. So the benefits system-wide of sprinkler systems, now these sprinkler systems, I'm sure, were on 100% coverage. And we're not trying to mandate this coverage. What we're trying to do is encourage Alaskans, because most people aren't going to go to the large expense of tearing through the house to get 100% coverage, but of the easy installation of those ignition sources that can be covered easily. And I forgot I was going to bring some pictures of my house. When we built, we just feed into the water lines and put them in the furnace room. There's copper tubing going overhead, and there's a T, has a short pipe and sprinkler head in there covering that area. I can tell you that the freezing and thawing, especially with PEX now, hasn't been a problem. In fact, I have a 70-foot boat tender, and I have in the engine room where we have many other things other than diesel. I mean, we have electric motors and all kinds of things. And so in the water system there, we've installed the heads around in the machine room, because that's where a fire would probably occur from in the tender. And those have frozen, thawed for 15 years, and I've never had one break. I've never had any problems. I've had copper tubing split and break, you know, because we had some parts that were copper before we had the Quest plastic tubing that connected everything. But, you know, it's a very stable, very safe way of doing it. And like I say, we've had those there. And again, the whole purpose of this is to help save lives and help save properties and in Alaska, and to encourage the insurance industry to recognize partial coverage according to the state fire marshal's schedule of coverage, is the platinum, silver, gold designation that they've done. They need to finish that, and this encourages them to finish that classification. Right now, there isn't any benefit to tie to that system, even though they've developed the model program, but they need to work with the insurance companies to make sure that that all works right. So you've got a whole packet of people from fire departments and all in your packet of letters of support. And I've just, if you have any questions.
Any questions for Representative Seaton?
I got a couple.
First of all, you answered one of them, because in the report you were talking about, I was going to ask the question, was that 100% coverage? And I think you indicated that probably was, which would make a difference compared to what you're proposing. The other thing is, on this sheet that you handed out here, the cooking, I understood, but the heating source, that could be a variety of things. So is it like furnaces or electric heaters? Do you know what the breakdown of that 39% residential structure fire causes? Is it chimney fires?
Wood-burning stoves
or electric heaters? It'd be interesting to have a breakdown of that for the leading causes and what that 39% was made up of. Do you have that information?
I do have some of that information, and I can get it to you under, you have the, sorry, Representative Coghill through the chair. Yes, and that's one part of, I can get you that whole.
But and I don't have to have it right now, Mr. Chairman. Okay. It's just a question I'm going to have, especially it leads into the other question that I'll have, and that is on the first resolve on formalizing a model residential fire sprinkler system program. Have you a template in mind? As I noticed you showed a video from another state. Is there a residential sprinkler system program that you or the fire marshal have already proposed, and is there something that we can look at?
Yes, we have the fire marshal developed the Gold Star program. Had several different levels. The Gold Star was for a total system for apartments. Platinum was total system for residents. Silver was partial on apartments, and the bronze was partial system for single family residences. And those have the, I thought you had a copy of that. If you don't have a copy of that model program, I'll get it to you. But they've, the fire marshal worked for a couple years to develop that. And I thought you had, sorry.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Fire marshal concept.
Okay, and I'll let the fire marshal people talk. There are several questions that I will get to, but looking at the line of the testimony, some of these may be answered as we get through these.
Thank you, and Representative Coghill through the chair. The concept that we worked on and was developed through the fire marshal, the whole idea is to encourage the development of that with the insurance industry so we get the appropriate coverages that they can agree on, that what works where. So until we got it any farther than this, you know, the program they developed initially, but they haven't finalized.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions, because I don't know a whole lot about fire sprinklers. I was wondering how you said that they're a lot more sensitive than the commercial ones, and I was wondering exactly how sensitive they would be compared to like a fire alarm, which we know goes off accidentally. I mean, are these things, the first question is, are these things that go off accidentally? And if so, is there any concern with water damage? Fire damage is a huge problem, but water damage can also be a problem. So I was wondering if you could address that.
The information we have is that when they first came out, there was some question, and there were, but you know, those have all been resolved. And I'm not aware. I mean, it was in the millions to one kind of failure rate, and so I can't give you the, maybe the insurance guys can, and it may be in the NHTSA report. I don't recall.
Thank you.
Any further questions for the sponsor?
Only if you're going to let us listen to testimony, then get back to him.
Oh, we will. I don't think he's going anyplace. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this? I think we'll open it up to the public. Seeing none, we're going to go off net to Jeff Tucker. I probably ought to declare a conflict of interest. Jeff was my fire chief for a number of years. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing fine, Representative Olson. And I wasn't able to see the video, but I bet that the fire safety house that Representative Seaton saw was from Soldotna, which I got on a grant.
Can you please state your affiliation for the record, Jeff?
I'm sorry, it's Jeff Tucker. I'm here on behalf of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association, and I'm here to speak in favor of House Concurrent Resolution Number 1. I think that Representative Seaton has got a resolution here that does two things. It's encouraging of home sprinkling systems, and it looks for ways to induce incentives for individuals to put home sprinkler systems in their homes. We understand the benefit of it in the fire service, but I think it's important to give folks the incentive to do it. And I think working with the insurance agencies and working with the state fire marshals is a good way of doing that. And so the Alaska State Fire Chiefs Association is in favor of this resolution. And I'll stand for any questions.
Jeff, that was going to be my next question. Will you take a few? And Representative Coghill will start off.
Thank you, and I appreciate your testimony. If the state fire marshal formalized a program, then would the fire chiefs be willing to do inspections, and what would the cost of inspections be, do you suppose?
Well, that's an interesting question, Representative Calico. It would depend on the program and how they set it up. We do home safety inspections in our department right now. We'll come in and do inspection programs for smoke detectors and CO detectors and do installations for that. The current 13D regulations for home sprinkler installation can be basically done by plumbers who are trained to do it. They're fairly simple systems as opposed to commercial systems, and most fire departments, or a lot of fire departments in the state, have folks who are trained to do some type of code enforcement, especially in deferred cities. So it would be something we could potentially do. As far as a cost, that would be up to the jurisdiction. Again, for us, it's no charge for our type of home inspections. I don't think the impact would be that great to a department.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks again, Jeff.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Next up, Jeff Fide, State Farm.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Jeff Fide, Loss Mitigation Administrator with State Farm Insurance. I first would like to make it clear that State Farm supports residential fire sprinklers. We are members of the Home Fire Sprinkler Coalition. That is the organization leading the country in educating consumers, builders, and fire service on the value of residential sprinklers. State Farm is the largest insurer of homes in Alaska and the country, thus our continued interest in the subject. We support what we believe to be the purpose of the resolution, that is to encourage installation of fire sprinklers in residences. The concept's terrific. We do offer discounts for fire sprinklers installed in accordance with nationally recognized standards that are proven to work. We talked a little bit about the standards that the National Fire Protection Association, 13, 13R, and 13D. Those are the standards that we recognize to provide discounts for. We are not able to offer discounts for systems that do not meet the minimum requirements of these national standards. In fact, if we were to realize increase in fire losses in structures that had hybrid systems or systems that didn't comply but had some sort of sprinkler in there, we might have to, you know, there might be pressure to raise rates to adjust to that type of loss. Our concerns with the proposal are, one, it sets different levels of sprinkler protection and design that are not consistent with or near equivalent with the national standards. We would suggest that if different levels are desired, then perhaps at lowest level, the silver or the bronze, be a complete fire sprinkler system in accordance with NFPA 13D for the one and two family dwellings. Secondly, there may be false data produced should a fatality or a major injury occur or a structure loss that's protected with a sprinkler system designed below the national standards. Data would show that fire sprinklers are not as effective as believed. This will set back any advocacy advancements for residential sprinklers to date. Lastly, the concept of partial sprinklers or hybrid sprinklers just in the kitchen, just over the furnace, that concept was flatly rejected when considered by Standards Committee on Fire Sprinklers. And I thank you for your time. That's just our concern. We look forward to, working with the fire marshal and the sponsor of the bill to fine-tune this and make it something that really would encourage folks to use residential sprinklers.
We take a question, Jeff?
Sure.
Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just thought Jeff might be a good person to ask the question about whether they've, in their experience, had any problems with water damage, with sprinklers going off accidentally and there being water damage.
It was mentioned that the failure rate of sprinklers is like 1 to 60,000 heads, 60 million heads, I'm sorry, that have been out in use in the country today. So the concern of the failure rate is not an issue for us.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coghill.
I grew up in a family of six kids. I don't know that we could we could have, we probably were the 6 millionth one. It seemed like we could have destroyed anything. So are those really children safe? I mean, you're talking about baseballs in the house and things like that. I can think of all the things that we could have done as young men. Has that not been a problem?
To this point, no. And, you know, we see all kinds of damage to plumbing systems that are in houses, and you can imagine any kind of way you could damage a plumbing system.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, could I ask another question?
Certainly.
If we did formalize these different STAR programs and there was some permitted installation requirements, would that be something you'd consider, or would you really require a national standard that was beyond a state standard?
You know, we would recognize things put into 13D or 13R or 13 because we know and we believe that they perform to some expected level. Anything beyond that has not been tested, nor is there enough information about how they would perform. And the concern is if we put one sprinkler head in a room and the homeowner does it without some design consideration for the pressures that are needed and the gallons per minute of water that are needed to operate the sprinkler, you know, the sprinkler may not even operate. So there's concern there when we get to the level of, you know, the homeowner trying to do it without consideration for the needs of the pressures and the water flows that are necessary.
Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
Then, for your information, how do you certify that it is under that particular 13D or I?
Yeah, when we get applications in, and there's the question, the agent verifies if the home is sprinklered in accordance with either one of those standards and applies the discount appropriately.
Okay.
Any more?
Not at this point, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thanks again.
You're welcome.
Paul Michelson, are you with us?
Yeah, hello.
Good afternoon. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Paul Michelson, M-I-C-H-E-L-S-O-H-N. I'm representing the Alaska State Home Builders Association. I am a builder in the Anchorage area. I'm sat on many committees nationally and locally, code committees for the ICC and for the National Association of Home Builders, and have been working on sprinkler issues for approximately 10 years now. I sat on the ICC board for fire and life safety, the ICC board of building and energy, the ICC board of mechanical and plumbing, and the National Association of Home Builders boards equal or the same. Right now, I'd like to take the opportunity, Mr. Chair, to, I'm sitting telephonically. I just left Juneau 2 hours ago. I apologize for not being able to attend this. I would like to thank the sponsor of the bill and his co-sponsors for the inclusion and of the words voluntarily. I think they are placed, without having it in front of me, in three places. The first paragraph, line one, third word. The third whereas, the fifth word, the first be it resolved, second line before statewide, and the second further be it resolved. Are they placed there? Could you inform me of that so I can continue, please?
We're bringing the sponsor up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, those are the places where the I'm trying to think if it's in the...
It's not in the first resolve.
Yeah, in the first resolved on the line 12 at the very end of it is voluntary statewide program. So, yes, those are the four places that voluntary was inserted into the draft.
With that being said, then the Alaska State Home Bill Association was changing their position, and we're in favor of the House CR resolution as written. I would like to further continue discussion a little bit. I believe the gentleman from State Farm did an excellent job. I want the legislation to be aware that there is currently a process in which sprinkler systems will be mandated in all one- and two-family dwellings. It is being mandated through the inclusion of a chapter in the IRC 2009 edition, which now, as of a vote last September in Minneapolis, Minnesota, through ICC regulation, that is now being included. With that being said, that the word voluntary has always been and continues to be in effect in the state of Alaska and many places nationwide. Voluntary is the word that we want to keep, and voluntary is the utmost importance to keep it in there. No one wants to be forced to place sprinkler systems in their home. I'm on telephonically, obviously, and I did not get to witness the video that was placed. If it's the same video I have seen on numerous occasions throughout the country, keep in mind the video shows an arson started fire. It's a with one sprinkler head over the direct source of ignition, and yes, the sprinkler system did put out that fire. However, it was brought up that these so-called simple low volume, low heat sprinkler heads, when placed on a wall head, and they do spray about 6 to 8 feet, if you have a 14-foot room, it's not going to get to the other side of the room. It's only going to directly affect the fire that started immediately under it. With this being said, we don't feel that the low-cost systems are going to adequately cover, and the cost, I was told, of $8, I believe, is false. We have done many studies in the industry, and we find out that there a cost of anywhere from $3 to $8 a square foot. What this will do is put a burden on the average home buyer. Every $1,000 to $2,000 a home increases in value, you lose about 2% to 4% of the available buyers for that home. I'm afraid that if we include, I'm getting a little bit off the subject because it's, I just want you all to be aware, as long as the wording states voluntarily, we're not opposed to it. What we have to be afraid that no one's bringing up is that this soon will not be a choice of voluntary, it will soon be mandated. The State Farm Insurance representative brought up that they only want to see a 13, 13D, a 13R system. This is what has been typical in the industry. When a fire marshal gets the right to choose what you can put in and they demand a 13D, 13R, 13 system, it includes a lot more than just a sprinkler system. It also includes audible sound devices, spotlighting systems, and the actual placement of the heads. We happen to put a system in a State Farm building for an agent on a voluntary system. It was a $33,000 system. That's not a low-cost system. It was strictly voluntarily. The person did not have to do the system, but since we decided to do the system, we had to put a complete, a 100% complete 13D system in the structure. The PEX tubing that was indicated does freeze, does break. It has a much more tolerance to cold than does copper, but it does have the ability to break and freeze. Another question was brought up on kids. It's never been tested in residential houses on how much abuse these heads will take, and someone brought up that kids do break. I hate to say I was a little rambunctious as a young kid, and I would have surely have broken something like this in my house because my parents fanned me many times for breaking things. I know I'm jumping all over. In the past 20 years, fire deaths in houses, newer homes, in houses built in the past 20 years, fire deaths in homes has recited approximately 74%. The actual amount of calls that the fire district does on residential fires is less than 2% of the emergency calls that they respond to. I don't believe this HCR1 will address any of that. I believe it's a great proposal, and it continues to be voluntary as long as the legislature and the state and the fire marshals understand that it is voluntary only. We are in total support of what is in front of you today. I would be willing to answer any questions, all questions that any of the legislators and yourself, Mr. Chair, would have for me at this time.
Representative Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions. First of all, you quoted a statistic that kind of got my attention, that of the new homes, the fire safety rate has gone down 70%. Can you give me some of the reasoning that you understand behind that?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Mr. Coghill, the representative Coghill. The reason for this is the implementation of many safety standards, just as the GFI, which is a ground fault interrupter system. Currently in the NEC, there's been a new addition, which is called an arc fault interrupter. Arc fault interrupter separates any arcing or any misappropriation of the current of electricity to the house and shuts the breaker off immediately, which prevents fires. The implementation of better drywall techniques, the implementation of fire drafting, fire stopping, better insulation blocking, the installation of better flue piping, more efficient heat sources, better cooking appliances, and so forth. The houses, it's just been proven that the most of the deaths are occurring in older homes, and as was brought up before, trailers. Trailers would not be, I don't think, mandated in this. And to install a system in a trailer that's not going to be freezer, I think, would be not impossible, but almost impossible.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chairman, if I could ask him another question. We heard today that the vast majority of fires are going to be around the kitchen or around a heat source. And I understand the kitchen because that's the stove primarily. And so anything around the stove is going to be good. But the heat sources, we're going to be doing a little bit of study. But from your perspective, what are the most egregious heat sources that you know of for fire danger?
Through the chair, Mr. Coghill, Representative Coghill. I believe that the heat source in the kitchen, that one concerns us because heat cooking fires are mainly due to grease fires. And I don't know if anybody has witnessed, you throw water on grease, it spreads. Mm. It won't necessarily put it out. And then what you do is you create an overabundance of smoke, and the fire sprinkler system will not diminish the smoke, it'll just increase the smoke. We have done some looking into it. We find the majority of fires in residential actually start on the outside, usually caused by cooking utensils being barbecues, ashes put out by the door. Sprinkler system's not going to prevent these or help these, and a low-cost system's not going to prevent these either.
Okay. And then from the home builder's perspective, on a retrofit, do most water supplies in a house have enough capacity that you could plumb in, or would you have to retrofit, say, a main feeder line to retrofit a house?
If I can answer that through the chair, Representative Coghill, in two ways. This one sprinkler system I mentioned on this State Farm building, it was a building that serviced four bathrooms totally, bathrooms being a toilet and a sink. And because it had a 13D system in it, we had to bring a 8-inch water main in. From the curb, and just the water main alone was over $11,000. To answer your question more directly, on a city water supply, I believe there'd be adequate water. When you have a house which over 33% of the residences in the state of Alaska are on private systems, there is the extreme possibility that those systems then would have to have storage systems put in. And also they would have to have pumps put into the storage systems to give them the primary water. Now, on a well system, you all know they run by electricity. In the event of a fire, the head goes off, the electricity could be stopped, which then would stop the flow of water, which would the effectiveness of the system would cease immediately. And on one other question, if I may, just go along with that, on the statistics set, there's only 1 in 60,000 premature discharges. Well, then Anchorage must have got all of them, because there was a Sheraton Hotel 2.5 months ago that had a freeze up, which cost over $100,000 in damages and caused the hotel to shut its main entrance down for 3.5 weeks. My accountant had heads go off above her 2 times in 1 year, and I have another house in town that the head has gone off twice in 18 months.
Follow up?
Well, that was going to, actually, he anticipated one of my questions. My house is on its own well pump, and so what we'd have to do if we're going to do a formalized sprinkler system, then what we'd have to do is create standards for those who are not on water mains in order to have some kind of a way to give them a star rating then, I take it.
Through the chair, Representative Coggle, I believe that is correct. And the other problem you have is as soon as you put a storage system, an assisted viable source of water, that system then has to be inspected once a year. And I could be wrong, but I think the representative from State Farm will tell you that there is an exclusion in the policy that says that if your system isn't maintained or inspected, it could be a reason for non-payment of the claim.
Yeah. And then, I'll ask questions later on, but one of the things I'll probably go into is, should you ever sublet, what the responsibility would be, and that probably wouldn't go to you as a home builder. So, but anybody listening, that's a question I'll have.
Well, I can maybe answer that if I was asked the question, sir.
Sure.
Go for it.
Mr. Chairman, from a home builder's perspective, if there was a sublet, for example, you have a duplex and you have people living in the bottom, and the fire sprinkler system didn't work and they did have some property damage, or even physical damage, what the liability issue would be.
Through the chair, Representative Coggle, we have been concerned about that because what the sprinkler system does, in our opinion, is creates a false sense of security to the occupant. We have asked the question to several insurance companies, and there is no answer. We've asked the question to attorneys, and attorneys just I hope there's no attorneys in the room. They give the typical
only one.
Bad topic.
Okay, well, I'll try
Mr.
to.
Chairman.
their answer to it is the individual representing the plaintiff will go after the deepest pockets they can locate. Is that a good enough answer, Mr. Cockhill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions for Paul? Thanks again, Paul. Kelly Nicolello from the Fire Marshal's Office.
For the record, my name is Kelly Nicolello. I'm the Assistant State Fire Marshal for the Department of Public Safety. And what I'd like to do, if I could, Mr. Chairman, is read a letter from the State Fire Marshal, Dave Tyler, who could not be here today, and then be available for any questions that you may have.
Oh, certainly.
Thank you for sponsoring HCR1, Residential Fire Sprinkler Incentive Program. I support this resolution. And daily we encounter the ravages of fire as we are notified of fire events occurring throughout the state of Alaska. The single-family residence is an area where we have little regulatory authority. Our data indicates that this is where most of our structure fires and almost all of our Alaska's fire deaths occur. The intention of this program is to help reward those who take this proactive step. Installing residential sprinklers not only makes for a safer living environment, it reduces fire suppression costs and the hazard to firefighters. It also reduces the risk to insurance companies. This incentive program is a good step in that direction. Individual responsibility is imperative to home fire safety. No one can take better care of you or your family than you. When those efforts fail, nothing will protect you better than an operational residential sprinkler system. Even in our urban areas, we lose far too many lives and homes to fire. The most effective way to save your home from fire is to prevent it in the first place. When we fail to prevent the fire, a residential sprinkler system is the next best thing. The sprinkler system will usually extinguish the fire before the fire department gets to the scene. At the very least, it will contain the fire until help arrives. I firmly believe it is appropriate to recognize those who do take this proactive approach to home fire safety and recommend this incentive program to encourage the installation of residential fire sprinkler systems. Respectfully, David Tyler.
Kelly, could I get you to fax the written testimony to our office later on this afternoon at 465-3835?
You should actually already have it in your packet, sir.
We're checking as we speak. Any questions for Fire Marshal? Representative Coggill.
I asked the sponsor of the bill about the formalized process, and that he talked about the STAR program, and I was slow to pick up on that. But how would you see qualified installers? Would you anticipate that that would be something that you would have kind of the gold stamp on, that you'd be able to say they were either authorized or permitted?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, that's part of our idea behind that. At the same time, being able to use people who were interested, like plumbers, who had the correct training, either through the Department of Labor or through a ICC certification course, to be able to go into a home and make an assertion of whether or not it meets the requirements. And then the certificate would be issued through us as proof of that, and then they could apply that to their insurance.
And so would that be something that you would intend to do by way of a regulatory makeup?
No, sir. This is a voluntary program, so from that standpoint, I don't believe there is a regulatory issue here.
Okay. Well,
unless I'm not quite getting your question,
Mr. Chairman. The question is that they were talking about a formalized system or a formalized model that would give authorized and permitted installers some kind of an authority in order to go through this platinum, gold, silver, or bronze. And so in this resolution is asking the fire marshal to formalize this residential sprinkler system program. So I understand it would be voluntary, but you would have a manufacturer's approval, you would have authorized and permitted installation requirements. And so I'm just kind of curious as to who would do that. Is that something that would be left to us as a legislature, or is that something you would formalize in your levels of protection plan?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, I would say that as a resolution, it's not going to carry the full weight of an actual bill. And so unless we were given the authority to the legislature to actually formalize it, I don't think that we would have the ability to actually put it in regulation.
Okay. By the way,
it would be a recommended practice is probably as close as we could go from that standpoint.
I was just going to make a comment. The fire marshal, Mr. Tyler, was in my office, a very persuasive man. So,
yes, sir, he is.
I had to quit arguing with him after a while, but he's very persuasive. But one of the things I failed to ask him was, let's just say in a particular area, the North Pole area, for example, where I have most people on wells, and the voluntary program began to take some legs, and several people got their houses on sprinkler system. It seems to me that the insurance rate is going to be based on, first of all, the fire engine coverage, the capacity and equipment to get to people. Would this sprinkler system affect that insurance area, or would it just, do you anticipate, affect them individually?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, I would say that this would have no effect on the ISO rating for that particular area, because that's really a public capability rating is what that is, through the insurance service organization. That gives the rating of a fire department, whether it be a class 1, class 2, class 3, for a particular area. So the individual buildings themselves, as far as how many buildings are sprinklered, whether it even be commercial or whether or not it be residential, from my understanding, that is not a point of consideration for that rating. Okay. So therefore, it would not affect the insurance as the general area is concerned.
And, Mr. Chairman, one other. I asked the fire chiefs if they had come in and inspect, for example, an installation that I did. I'm a very capable man, but I am not a certified plumber or anything. But I wouldn't mind having a local fire chief come in, but, man, would I be cautious about inviting a fire marshal into my house. But would you be willing to work with the fire chiefs to do that kind of inspection?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, absolutely. We would sit down and come up with something that would be workable for everybody.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thanks again. Is there anybody else online that would care to testify on HCR 1? Seeing none, and nobody else in the room changed their mind about testifying? With that, I think we'll close it to public testimony and bring it back to the committee for discussion. Representative Coghill.
Do we have the representative back up the table?
Certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could ask him a couple of questions, and for sure, Mr. Tyler is a very persuasive man, so... Mr. Eaton, though this is a voluntary program, and but at the outset, it looks like we could encourage the insurance companies, but it looks to me like at least the one is willing to state that unless it falls under these 13 D, I, or R standards, that they're not interested. Are they the only insurance company that have responded accordingly, or have you had a broader discussion?
Through the chair.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record again.
Representative Seaton, the sponsor of the bill, and Representative Coghill through the chair. We haven't had those any kind of formal contact with the insurance companies about what they would do because, you know, this is a process where you have to have an iterative process to see what the program is before they could see whether it would be enough of a benefit to them to do or not. This encourages them to have that conversation with the fire marshal, with the insurance company, with the insurance industry. But whether, you know, what they come to in the end, I mean, they may decide they want 100%, you know, they might want that $33,000 coverage in that had to go into the one to meet that full retrofit, new plumbing and all that kind of stuff. The whole idea between residential sprinkler systems is that you have individual heads go off. So you need much less water supply than when you're doing commercial heads like we have here, where you're going to have a big fire go before you get enough heat to activate these. They're 200 and 260 degrees or something like that, where these residentials are 135 to 155 degree. They go off when the fire is very small in the area of the fire and put it off. So you generally are not trying to do this where you're getting a whole house engulfed and then this is going to go in and put out the house and you need that large quantity of water. So I think that it sounded to me like what they were installing was a commercial system where you're counting on all the heads being active at once. The beauty of what we're trying to do is they put in more heads covering the area, but they go off at a low enough temperature that you're going to have single or maybe two heads go off, but you're not having all of the water system draining at one time because they go off at so much of a lower temperature. So I don't know where the insurance companies are going to come from on this. We've talked to the director of insurance, and they're willing to have that conversation, but we need to get the program and see what that program is, need that conversation. So it's really an iterative program, and it's not that we have something we can say, here is the program now that covers exactly in this way. Now, what would be your response as an insurance company for giving that? It may turn out that the insurance companies say we want 100% because we don't know that the people aren't going to lie to us. Maybe they're smokers, in which case, you know, probably partial coverage isn't going to do you much good just because of the ignition sources are then all over the house. And so this is very much an individualized program where an individual that installs these, gets them certified, would approach their insurance company to do it.
New question.
This goes back to your concept paper on residential fire sprinklers where you talked about the different star systems. And you did talk about qualified installers permitted by SFMO and under 13 AAC 50.035. So I'm sure that must be a manufacturing code plus a code under some statute. So We're looking for a qualified installation. So tell me what your concept there is.
Thank you, Representative Coghill, through the chair. In Alaska, we have lots of places that don't even have code. I mean, on the Kenai Peninsula, we're not Homer, outside of Homer, Kachemak City, where I live, codes don't apply. So the idea with these full 13D systems or whatever is you have to have someone that's certified to even make the installation, the plumbing installation, or the fire sprinkler heads. And there are certified fire sprinkler installers that design the systems, these full 100% coverage systems. And there's no thought at all to replace that. What we're trying to do is encourage the existing homeowners, which is the majority of the population. The majority of our houses aren't new houses. We've got a lot of old construction, and a lot of construction is done by homeowners across the state, or trailers. And the whole idea here is to encourage the installation of something that would save lives.
And Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the sponsor putting voluntary in there. I know there are some discussions. I think I heard on testimony today that it might be mandatory, coming from somewhere, from a federal level, I understand.
Mandatory isn't in the
before us. I understand that, and so.
But if we worry about everything the feds are going to do, it'll keep us awake all night.
Yeah,
they do.
So then, the other question I would have is to train and certify plumbers. Have you had a conversation with anybody who, under the workforce development or under the Alaska Works, is looking at certifying plumbers to install or to certify them? So were you thinking about pushing them to come up with some kind of a certification program?
Yes, the Department of Labor, they were here, I guess they're from the previous bill.
Are they?
Oh, yeah. Maybe we can get Department
if
of Labor.
If I could just get a couple of minutes. I don't want to drag this all the way to five, but I'm kind of interested to make sure that I'm asking all the right questions. So.
Sure. Just pull up a chair and you can stay, Representative.
Hello, I'm Gray Mitchell. I'm the Director for Labor Standards and Safety at the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And through the chair, Representative Coghill, I don't know of any, you know, development plans for the workforce in this area. What I understand about these systems is that, you know, a licensed journeyman plumber would have the skills to do them. I'm not sure about this special certification for certain sprinkler systems that the insurance company may be placing in addition to that. But that's not a requirement that the Department of Labor enforces.
And Mr. Chairman, this committee is no stranger to the professional debate that happens between various different groups, especially if they have a certified whatever. So the plumbers and pipe fitters are definitely one of them, and the sprinkler system installers is a subset of them that are very jealous about their world. And so I can see us getting into a little bit of a brouhaha. Especially if you are going to be tasked putting together some kind of a plumber's certification for residential sprinkler systems. Have you anticipated that since you've seen this verbiage?
Through the chair, it's possible that that would develop, although with this being a voluntary requirement, you know, I doubt that we would have any mandate to create a specialized license for sprinkler installations.
New question? Follow up?
No, just a comment, Mr. Chairman. Things always sound simple until you try to make them work. So,
and Representative Coghill, through the chair, we did have this conversation in the previous legislature. You know, this duplicate of this without the word voluntary in there, although it was totally a voluntary program, we dealt with this before. And, you know, the question was on verify or certify, and it turned out that because there was some question of whether this put some higher level where it says certify. Yeah. And what we're getting in here was so that the plumber could come in and verify that the system was in place, as well as doing their own installation, but that Ledge Drafting has come over and said that the words are exactly the same from their standpoint, and so they left it at that word, but there's no development further beyond that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions for the sponsor? What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not willing to hold the legislation up yet.
Yes. Oh, I'm worried about the now, option. Not the yet.
With that, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we go ahead and move the CS for concurrent resolution number one, version R, from committee with individual recommendations. And I don't, was there an attached fiscal note?
Attached zero.
Attached zero fiscal note.
Attached zero, yeah.
Seeing no opposition, we will move it out of committee and we will adjourn it at 4:50.
Thank you.